couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Onward, The Way Back, Emma, and Greed, plus Netflix, I Am Not Okay With This. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Dark Waters. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is sort of spilling over into regular national news, and that is because of the coronavirus, which of course has nothing to do with Corona beer, even though there are people, do you realize there are people out there who are saying that they don't want to drink Corona beer because of the coronavirus? I feel like I should buy some Corona beer to try and offset the stupidity of people who don't understand that even though some things have the similar words, does not mean that they're associated with each other. But because of the coronavirus fear, or COVID-19, the new James Bond movie, No Time to Die, has been postponed. And that was actually kind of a shock, because there have been things here and there that have been canceled or limited because of the fears of the coronavirus spreading. And it's not that this virus is necessarily so terrifying, it's because of the unknown. And the reason I think people are wanting to cancel things is because they're not 100% sure of how it's transmitted, the rate of transmission, how quickly it's transmitted, and they don't even know as much about the incubation period. What's, I think, putting people into a panic is the, we don't know what's happening. We don't know how it works. And that's why there's a rush to shut things down. It's not that coronavirus is, it's not a death sentence, but it is one of those things that it's very, very dangerous, especially to people who are, upper respiratory issues, especially the elderly or anyone who interacts with the elderly. Like me, I take care of my folks and they're in their 70s and 80s. And I don't want to get it, not because I'm afraid it's going to kill me, but I wouldn't want to get the coronavirus because I wouldn't want to spread it to them, because it's so much more dangerous to them. But the reason they're shutting a lot of this stuff down is because they don't quite know all the details about it. But that's why they're shutting down, like in Columbus, Ohio, the Arnold Classic, which is Arnold Schwarzenegger does this big event every year in Columbus. It's a fitness expo, and they've shut down a lot of the public elements to it. They still have the competitions, but you don't have the public coming in and watching the competitions. You don't have this giant trade show that they usually do. It takes over the convention center in town, and it's a huge economic thing. So that's one of those reasons. This is kind of how the coronavirus is impacting the economy now, because people are basically saying, hey, situations where we're going to be bringing people in from all the over the world together, let's be a little bit more judicious in what risks we're going to take. And I think that's the reasoning behind No Time to Die getting moved, because right now is when they'd be promoting the movie. Right now is when they start junketing for it. Right now is when they would start flying reviewers to international locations to promote the film. And it makes sense for a month before that movie comes out to say, okay, let's just put the brakes on this and put it in a different release slot. Also, I don't think they were ever 100% sold on that release date, because it was early April. And early April is not a time they've traditionally released James Bond movies. Most James Bond movies recently have been fall releases, sometime in November, right around Thanksgiving. I think as a kid, I remember seeing movies like A View to a Kill during the summer, but they're talking 30 years ago. Especially all the Daniel Craig James Bond movies have all come out right around Thanksgiving, and that does well for the franchise. And Hollywood, as much as it is a pioneer at times, it will also be afraid to do something too differently. And moving it to an early April release was a risk. Now, April has become a viable place to release movies. The Fast and Furious movies do extremely well in April. The Avengers movies do well in April. In fact, pushing it later in April to almost May, but you know, April can be a good time for movies, but I think that, that this gave Eon Productions a chance to pump the brakes and say, hey, let's do this a little more traditionally and not do something that might mess up the release. And also, it wouldn't get caught up into the fears of the virus. And I think that that's a smart move on Sony. I think right now, if you're going to be doing any sort of traveling, you do need to be careful. And who knows? The other thing is, it may be a travel thing where suddenly you go somewhere where there's an outbreak and you may not be let back in the country. Cause that kind of stuff's happening. So I think over the next couple months, we're going to be seeing a lot of that. And we're going to be seeing a lot of that with film festivals. I know South by Southwest is starting to get affected by whether or not they're going to have people out there or traveling. These are things that, unfortunately, are going to impact any sort of travel destination. I'm glad we haven't seen a rush for every film being released in April to be moved, but I'm not surprised that they did that for such a big movie that they're going to have such a big press push before. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is Run, which opens on May 8th.
You do everything for me. You teach me. You cook for me.
Am I a burden?
Sweetheart.
I could do more.
I'm your mom. It's my job to take care of you when you need me. And you need me.
Are you okay, Mom?
Of course I'm okay. I have you.
This looks like a smaller movie. It stars Sarah Paulson, and it looks like it's a nice little thriller. And I like the fact that Sarah Paulson's got a little bit of a boost to her career. I'm not a huge fan of hers, but I love the fact that she got a little bit of boost for this because she has never had a huge career before this, but it's nice to see it not just be some the latest flavor of the month of a 20-something actress. You know, women over 40 getting decent acting roles is always a great thing, especially when they're actors that you've at least seen around in movies and television before. And of course, American Horror Story was a big boon to her. I'm interested in this one. I don't want to watch any more trailers to this, but because I fear it's going to be very spoilery if they drop another one. But this looks like it's a creepy, somewhat unnerving movie to watch. And I like horror movies, and this is more of a thriller, it looks like, but I'm interested in it. The next one I want to talk about is Artemis Fowl, which opens on May 29th.
You've grown strong, son. And smarter than I ever imagined.
Then take me with you.
You're all I have now, Artie. There's just one very important thing I have to do.
Authorities launched a worldwide manhunt for the famous collector. He is suspected to have been behind some of the biggest robberies ever.
Dad, your family has taken something of great value from us.
Now, this one was already moved. I think it was slated for release, I think, originally last September, and then it got moved to January, and then it got moved again by, of course, May 29th. Hopefully, the coronavirus fears will have been settled out, and they'll figure out travel restrictions and quarantine procedures that are realistic based on the real activity of the virus. So I don't think this is going to affect Artemis Fowl. Plus, they're not going to have that big of a marketing push and junket push on this movie compared to, say, you know, like a James Bond film. But Artemis Fowl looks interesting. It's one of those that I'm not quite sold on yet. It feels very much like, let's do the next Harry Potter type movie. And we've seen those multiple times, you know, going back 10, 15 years of, you know, City of Ember and Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief and Aragon and His Dark Materials, all these different things that they tried to reboot something to the level of Harry Potter, and it never quite worked. This looks like it might be interesting, but it does look a little bit more skewing childish than Harry Potter. Even though Harry Potter appeals to grade school kids, it's a very grown-up story. This one looks like it's a little bit more factoring in the gee whiz golly factor than it is the more grown-up factor. So we'll see. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Way Back and Emma. Thank you. welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews with The Way Back. An alcoholic finds redemption in coaching a high school basketball team.
Our basketball coach had a heart attack the other night. We need a new coach, Jack.
The last time we made the playoffs, back when you were playing.
Go, line up!
You're Marcus, right?
That's right.
How many threes did Marcus make last year?
A percentage of 26.
Damn. Want to know why they're leaving you open? It's because they don't think you could hit the ocean from the beach.
So how are you liking coaching so far?
Great. Just getting used to the players.
What players?
Heard you're coaching basketball.
Yeah, keeps me busy, keeps my mind off other things.
I said jump into the movie reviews, but this was one I'm not going to review, and there's a reason I'm not going to review it. I was not allowed to see this movie. And I say that very deliberately, because there's movies all over the place. There are some movies that they don't screen because they're small budget. They're a struggling studio. They might be able to send me a screener, or they just don't have it in their budget to widely publicize it. There are movies that they screen, like Emma, which I'll be talking about a little bit later. Emma was a movie that they screened last week, but it conflicted with The Invisible Man. It just, I had to choose one, so I chose The Invisible Man. And I don't blame Emma or Focus Features for that, because they tried to show me the movie. I just wasn't able to see it. I had to choose. You know, you have those decisions you have to make in life. And then there are movies that they don't screen. And I know they screen The Way Back in some markets, but not in my market. And I wasn't going to drive 2.5 hours out of my way to go see it. And I was seriously going to go see it Thursday night, because they do those early preview screenings that you can just go buy a ticket for. Well, guess what? It didn't show on Thursday night. I have found, and my the experience I've had is, when it is that hard to see a movie for some press, that usually means the movie may not be very good. Also, a big warning flag for this is it's a Ben Affleck movie, and he's starring in it, and it's this apparently personal story of redemption. And this is the kind of thing you would have seen coming out 3 or 4 months ago during award season. Now, Affleck has had a little bit of a struggle with his movies. He did that movie, and I forget the name of it, but it was a gangster piece from the 40s. He did that a couple years ago, and that really went nowhere for his big award bait movie. It's been a while since he's had an Argo. He hasn't quite captured that magic again. Now, Argo was the last one that people were like, oh yeah, that Affleck, he has got some talent. And that's not a diss against him. I think he's done some great stuff. And of course, you know, he did some stuff before that. And he has an Academy Award for writing for Good Will Hunting. This one does not look like it's one that the studio has much faith in. They did not screen it for me. And I have to look at it. I mean, part of it is you watch these movies, and how many movies do we have to see about an alcoholic getting redemption? There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a lot of people that struggle with the real issue of substance abuse, and these can be inspiring movies for people to watch. But for somebody who watches these, the story has been told so many times, and they can sometimes be such a slag, and they can be tough to go through, because you just don't want to keep watching somebody being self-destructive. And even if they do get their redemption, it gets tiresome at times. So The Way Back doesn't seem like it's a movie that really interests me anyway. So I got to say, when I couldn't go see it, I'm like, well, okay, shrug my shoulders and go, guess I'm not going to watch that movie. It just doesn't look like the kind of movie I'm interested in. I really have not heard much buzz about it. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's some people that like it, and you like that kind of movie, that the personal redemption over personal demons. Sure, check it out. But otherwise, I got to give it a preemptive suck. I mean, I tried to go see it. They just wouldn't let me.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is Emma. In this adaptation of Jane Austen's classic, an idle rich daughter meddles in other people's love lives without addressing her own.
We gather here in this time of man's great innocence.
Emma.
Probably no
separate
gentleman.
Gentleman.
And a gentleman
of
fortune.
Relation.
Miss Woodhouse. Miss Woodhouse. Such news.
Okay, here's another one. This one, like I said, it was screened. I couldn't go see it because it was up against The Invisible Man, and I had to choose to go see that one because that was the only one opening that week. And I figured maybe I could get another screening of Emma. I didn't, but I ended up going to check it out. I was able to see it and use my own dime to go see this movie. And, Jane Austen, it's not you, it's me. No, it is you. It is you and your stories of the idle rich in Britain, of everyone trying to find a boyfriend, just have zero interest in my life. And I remember watching the movie, and as I left it, I thought, well, it looked beautiful. The costumes were nice. You know, the settings were beautiful. I felt like my grandmother after going to see a play and hating it, but needing to say something positive and be like, well, the costumes were nice. I mean, it is a beautifully done movie. I mean, the costuming is impeccable. The set design's gorgeous. The locations are beautiful. It looks very, very nice as a movie. And the actors in it are very good actors. Anna Taylor-Joy is actually turning into quite a good actor. I remember I first took notice of her when she did the movie The Witch, and I thought she was fantastic in that. And then she was in Split, and she was very good in that as well. And she's done some horror movies, and, you know, she's goes outside of the box. This one's a little bit more of that stuffy British film. But, got like Bill Nighy's in here, and I mean, they've got a really well-rounded cast. It's just, holy God, this movie is so boring. It is so boring. And here's the thing. I'm not a fan of Pride and Prejudice. I mean, like the Bridget Jones version of Pride and Prejudice, I thought was a cute little movie. But Pride and Prejudice, I've seen a couple different adaptations of it, and it bores me to tears. Again, I have no interest in the idle rich in the 1800s. I mean, it's just like, oh, isn't it awful? I don't have a boyfriend and you don't have a boyfriend. Let's have another ball. Oh, heavens to Betsy. Oh, we have a picnic now. Oh, let me have some crumpets. Oh, my heavens. I was so bored in this movie. I went in the back row because, you can buy these reserved seats now in these movies, and that's usually what I do. But sometimes if it's a movie where I'm not getting a good feeling about, or if it's a pretty empty auditorium, I'll go and I'll try and sit in the back row. And it's, the place was filled with middle-aged and older people because it was Emma. It was, this isn't a Michael Bay movie or anything like that. Yet no one was in the handicapped seats. So I sat in the handicapped seats just so I could go on my phone if I needed to. And I'm there texting my wife because it's not bothering anyone because no one's behind me. And I'm texting my wife and I'm going, oh my God, I'm so bored. Help me, please. And she's laughing at me through text because I have to go see this movie. And it's not like it's a bad movie. It's a bad movie for me. I just wanted werewolves or something to show up and make it more exciting, but it didn't happen. And it just was more boring Jane Austen. Oh, I'm exhausted talking about it. Anyways, if you like Jane Austen stuff, you'll probably love Emma. It's got more laughs in it than Pride and Prejudice. I mean, they're laughs where you're going to watch and you're going to go, so you sort of stifle the chuckle. So I'm going to have to say it sucks.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Onward and Greed. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews, and let's talk about Onward a little bit. In a world that has grown past magic, two brothers who never knew their father go on a quest to find lost magic to bring him back to life for a day.
This spell brings him back.
Back, like back to life?
He wanted to meet you more than anything.
Holy Tooth of Xadar! How did you...
I don't know, it just started!
Dad?
Ah! Just stop that part!
We've only got 24 hours to bring back the rest of Dad. We're going on a quest.
One of the things that I absolutely adore about Pixar is they always think out of the box. They're very good at that. There have been recent years where they're doing more sequels, which are fine. I'm okay with some of the sequels. But I like their original stuff. I like when they do something that's so completely out of the box and different and unique. And it's one of those studios that for the last couple decades, when you say people are just rehashing old stories, you can't say that about Pixar. I mean, yeah, sure, they did sequels to Monsters Incorporated and they've done all the Toy Story sequels, but they still do some really out there stuff. I mean, look at Inside Out. Inside Out was a stretch. Same thing with Up. When you say, oh, what are you going to do? We're going to do an adaptation of Cinderella. Oh, that's nice. What are you going to do? We're going to do a movie about a guy who puts a bunch of balloons on a house and flies to an island with a talking dog. Okay. The Pixar movies are really, really heady and different, but they always are grounded in human emotion. And that's what makes them work. And the production of the Pixar movies involves so much working out of the story and characters that it really makes charming things. Like even the Good Dinosaur, which is probably the least performing Pixar movie out there, even the Good Dinosaur still has elements of human emotion that make it work. Brave's the same way. You know, you can sit there and say, well, Brave kind of steals a little bit from Brother Bear, but still, Brave was a great movie. And Onward is a wonderfully charming movie, and it's out there, but you know, and there's been other entire movies and series made about daddy issues, and that's really what this is. I mean, you got these two, I think they're elves, played by Chris Pratt and Tom Holland, and they're trying to meet their dad, and they only bring him back from the waist down, so they're on this quest with this half of a father. We've seen the twisted fairy tales, and it's a good thing they took this long to make Onward because it's distanced itself in the cinematic landscape from Shrek enough. Because back when Shrek was a big thing, you kept seeing all these different twisted fairy tales, things like Happily Never After and Ella Enchanted, and sort of like the puns and the jokes just got old. So this is a good time to have brought back that idea, and Onward can be its own thing. And I think Onward is very charming. Now, it's not the best Pixar movie out there. Let's face it. It's not. It's not at the level of Up or Inside Out or WALL-E or The Incredibles. Or even some of the sequels. I mean, Finding Dory was a great sequel. The Incredibles 2 was a great sequel. But still, this movie's a great movie. I mean, here's the thing, you know, it's like getting upset or getting on Pixar's case because this isn't their best movie. It's sort of like yelling at your kid for getting an A on a test instead of an A plus. I mean, really seriously, you know, you gotta be a real jerk if you're gonna be like, you got 96%. How dare you not get 100? You know, I mean, it's still a good movie. And I said this about, Toy Story 4 last year. I like Toy Story 4. I thought it was a beautiful movie. It just didn't raise to the level of Toy Story 1, 2, and 3. Toy Story 1, 2, and 3, each of those were Grand Slam home runs. And Toy Story 4 was like a home run. But you just got 1 point instead of, you know, 4. But, I mean, it still was a home run. And I feel like it's the same thing with Onward. Onward, it doesn't look as Pixar as other Pixar movies do. It does kind of fluctuate outside of their general character design, which I don't know if they're trying to do that, but it doesn't quite look like a Pixar movie, but it certainly has the heart and soul of a Pixar movie. And the animation is beautiful. It's got plenty of stuff in there that the kids are going to like, especially the little kids. You know, it has the action and the adventure and the silliness and the comedy and the cuteness, but it also has a real story about human emotions, even though they're not humans in this. They're like elves. But human emotions, daddy issues, understanding your father, brotherhood, and, you know, just general family emotions, which, you know, we can use that now and then. And that's great. And then everybody can relate to it. And that's kind of what makes Onward such a good movie. It is a sweet, wonderful, charming movie. Like I said, maybe not Pixar's best, but it still totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Greed. A sleazy fashion tycoon is hosting his 60th birthday party, juxtaposing his life of opulence against that of those who make his garments.
He was his own man from the start.
What is the average wage in Sri Lanka?
50p a day. Imagine how many dresses I can get made.
He was a bully.
Not you had to shake my head.
It was a parasite.
It's classic tax avoidance.
Go away!
We
We've been working on this party for over a year. He wants it to repair his reputation.
It's all about image. The super yacht, the models. It's all part of a brand.
This is directed by Michael Winterbottom, and he has worked with Steve Coogan, who plays this sleazy fashion tycoon. He's worked with him multiple times before, mainly with Rob Broynton as well, in the Trip movies, either the Trip to Italy, the Trip to Spain. I think they're doing another one now. The Trip to Greece is, I think, coming out. And those are very whimsical British improv-y kind of thing where you take Broynton and Coogan and they go to these restaurants and they film them and they have their interaction. It's a real, I love those movies. I think they're a lot of fun, but they're breezy and whimsical. This one's trying to make a stronger point. And in the process, it's very, very British. And when I say it's very, very British, kind of like Emma, which I mentioned before, it's got a stuffy Britishness to it. If you've not attuned yourself to British humor, it almost appears that it doesn't exist. It's very dry in its humor, especially for the first act or two, where you won't even recognize it as humor as an American, but it's certainly there. It almost feels more like a Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous episode than it does a satire of excess. It has a good cast. Of course, you got Coogan in there being this sleazy character. You've got Ila Fisher playing his ex-wife, doesn't care about anyone below her societal stature. One of the things it also does is it pulls back a veil and says, oh, well, you know, when you're wealthy, you have access to celebrities and that lifestyle, and the celebrities will kind of kiss your butt as well, even if you're a sleazebag. And there are points to be made. I mean, there was a real Jeffrey Epstein point that could have been made that was squandered. And I don't know why they did that, unless maybe it just didn't fit. Maybe Epstein died or was captured and died before they could change this. Cause I think they really could have made a point in this. And they do have a point to be made. It's just, it takes Winterbottom so long to get there, that finally when you get to the third act, stuff happens, but you know, the movie does wear on you because it almost feels like it's making a hero out of this guy, and he's not. He's a sleazebag. And you can't quite tell whether it's condemning him or just flippantly going, oh well, that's how some people are. Eventually by the end of the film you get where they're going with it, but it takes a long time to get there. And that's my biggest problem. While I like the cast and I like the people involved, it just doesn't hit you hard enough. And that's weird for me to say, because usually in a movie like this, I'm like, okay, I got the message. But it's strangely is heavy-handed with his message when it's time for the message, but it doesn't really make that message well. It almost tries to make up for it near the end by hammering it home a little bit too much. So it's a very uneven movie, and it's interesting to see, and it is eye-opening, especially if you don't pay attention to the fashion industry, which I don't. It's a worthwhile movie to see, but it's really not super great. I'm going to give it a kind of rocks because I'm feeling nice right now.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about I Am Not Okay With This, The Box Office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Dark Waters. Money, 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 must be funny in the rich man's world. Money, money, money. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with the movie reviews and talk about not a movie, but a TV show. I Am Not Okay With This. It's on Netflix. It dropped last week, and it's an 8-episode series with a half hour episode each. So you can actually burn through it really quickly. A teenage girl struggles with her life in high school, which gets worse when she discovers she has telekinetic powers.
My name is Sydney. I'm a boring 17-year-old white girl. I'm not special.
Yippee.
Might help with your moods.
I keep losing my temper. I don't want to, but it just spills out. My dad died last spring. And now everything's so different. Dear Diary, when does this get easier?
This series stars Sophia Lillis, who most people would recognize from It and It Chapter 2. She played the young Beverly. They make her look very, very homely in this. They make her, she has a short sort of nondescript haircut. She wears very basic clothing. It also has Wyatt Olef in it, who also was in It as well. He played Stan Uris. So I find it interesting that they mined the actors from It to do this. Part of it is because it has some influence from both Stranger Things. It has some of the people who were involved in the production of Stranger Things, which of course had Finn Wolfhard in it, who was also from It. And it's also influenced by the people who did The End of the Effing World, which is another teen series. And I say teen series, it's got some dark, heavier stuff. While the subject matter is darker than you would expect for what a lot of parents would want to say, oh, I'm just going to let my 13-year-old watch this. You got to realize, once you get into teen literature and once you start getting into teen series, that there may be subjects in there that you might find are inappropriate for your kids, but they are actually appropriate for that age. You read a lot of teen literature, it deals with sex and it deals with violence and it deals with emotion and it deals with some pretty dark subjects. It's not always happy-go-lucky. And once the kids, once they hit puberty and they start having issues and complaints and problems that everyday people have, they need a way to work through this. And it's funny because I was turned on to this show by my son, who's 16 years old, and he had watched The End of the Effing World. I never did, but it's the same guy who wrote those. Both of those come from graphic novels, and it's the same author and some of the same people involved with the series. And supposedly it kind of exists in the same universe, even though one that I believe takes place in the UK and this one takes place somewhere in Pennsylvania. But it's the story of this girl coming to terms with her life and her sexuality and the fact that her father had committed suicide, and she's dealing with the grief and a single mom who's having trouble. And if you've ever spent any time with a woman and her teenage daughter, it is very volatile. It's funny. That's one of the things in the movie Lady Bird. That's one of the things I really appreciated about that, was it captured that volatility of the mother and daughter dynamic when the daughter's in her teen years. And I have a sister. I grew up with that. I lived that. I mean, I was on the sidelines during a lot of it, but I lived it. And it manages to capture that quite well. What makes the series very familiar is it almost feels like a retelling of the movie Carrie or the book Carrie. Now, it's taken out the overt religious themes that the character of Carrie White faces, but it is the same thing, where a girl in her puberty years has discovered she has this telekinetic power and what to do with it. But it takes it down a very different road than something like Carrie, because that's a very specific story path, but there are a lot of callbacks to it. And I find it an interesting connection to that story, but I think it makes it more accessible as the teenage girl. I really enjoyed it, and it's digestible, because like I said, there are these 8 episodes and they reach around 23 to 25 minutes. I think the first one might be a little longer, but it's basically a half hour for each episode. And you can burn through it in a weekend very quickly. I found it really interesting. Of course, it has some cliches and some stuff you see multiple times, but it does capture the volatility of teenage emotion and teenage experience, that whole thing about you have these emotions that just show up and you don't quite know how to handle them. Hopefully by the time you get to be an adult, you do. But it's actually a pretty good series. And it's something that's interesting to watch, because Netflix has aggressively been going after the teen market. And I think this has been flying under the radar for as much talk as there is about streaming online and streaming shows. Everyone's talking about Disney Plus and what Disney's trying to do. And of course, with The Mandalorian. And of course, you've got Amazon, which allows you to rent stuff as well. And Hulu is partnering with people like FX and other people. But Netflix has been trying to secure the younger market, because they're trying to get them so they will continue to watch Netflix. And that's why they have so many programs that cater to a young audience. And I think this is a great example of that. So ultimately, I think it's a decent little series. It's worth checking out. It's not for everybody because I'm saying it is geared towards teenagers. But if you like that sort of thing, yeah, check it out. It's a nice diversion from some of the other stuff that's on streaming. So I'm going to have to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. The Invisible Man did great last weekend, made $28 million, which exceeded what it was being predicted as. And it's the first bona fide hit of a horror movie of this type in 2020. And that's important because they've churned out so many of these and a lot of them have flopped. Everything from Hansel and Gretel to Fantasy Island to The Grudge. And finally, you got a nice, unique, solid, well-made horror movie that wasn't just trying to print money. It was actually trying to tell a good story. And that's, I think, why it topped the box office. And then Sonic the Hedgehog came in second, Call of the Wild. But that's really all we got since that was the only big release last weekend. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on Dark Waters. A Cincinnati attorney takes on chemical giant DuPont in a legal case about water pollution.
How many did you lose?
190.
190 calves.
You tell me nothing's wrong here. That's chemicals, I'm telling you.
I'm seeing documents. I don't understand.
They're hiding something.
That chemical. What if you drank it?
Drank it? It's like saying, what if I swallowed a tire?
What if whatever's killing those cows is in the drinking water?
This was unfortunate to have disappeared during award season. And this is always the danger you have with award season films because there's so many movies out there making noise that it becomes hard to focus in on the good ones. And sometimes some gets left behind. And one of the things, Dark Waters is a very deliberately paced film. It is not a lickety-split fast film. It's directed by Todd Haynes, who's done other award-nominated films and other significant movies. One of them he did was Carol, which got nominated for a Golden Globe and other awards. He did I'm Not There. He did Wonderstruck, which did not make any sort of traction a couple of years ago. But Dark Waters slow, it's deliberately paced, and I think it does that because it's trying to show what a slag it is to go through the legal proceedings for this. But I found it fascinating and relevant and important, especially when you want to talk about whether or not you should have government regulation and where the government should regulate. I mean, there are certain times where it may not be best to leave it to the people who are potentially polluting to make their own decisions. That may be a bad idea. And I had a chance to talk to Rob Bellette, who was the main character in this, the actual guy, the lawyer who Mark Ruffalo plays. And you can go back and listen to that in one of our archive shows. It's a great interview with him about what are the dangers of some of these chemicals, especially these unregulated chemicals. This is not a cheery, happy-go-lucky movie. It's not a feel-good movie. It's an important issue, and it's something that people should see. You can put your head in the sand, but that does not mean that this is going to go away. Powerfully done and worth checking out. It's one of the lost films of the 2019 award season. I say you should go check it out. And the Blu-ray itself doesn't have loaded special features. There's like three behind-the-scenes featurettes. There's one about uncovering it. There's one about the cost of being the hero, and then a spotlight on the real people. So it you don't have it loaded with special features, but it's worth checking out. Maybe just a rental as on demand. But it's something I wish people had seen more of because it's kind of a terrifying film that exists in reality. So I'm going to have to say that Dark Waters rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other releases this week include Queen and Slim and Titans, the complete second season. And that is it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Bloodshot, I Still Believe, and the controversial film The Hunt. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.